This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm in the studio with Kerry Jr. II. He is the show's producer.
Good morning, Stephen. How you doing?
Karen. I'm good. Today, we're talking about something pretty serious here in the city of Detroit, the kind of violence that we live with as Detroiters, the effect it has on us as individuals and as a community. We were reminded of all of this again this week after about 20 people were shot during a block party over on the west side.
Yeah, two people were killed and 19 people were wounded in a block club party this past weekend. It was Sunday morning. And I mean, the conversation that we want to have today with folks is it's not about just the tragedy itself and the response that the city had, but we also want to talk about this type of violence, right? The type of violence that's occurring here is a little different than what we're typically used to hearing about in our community. So that this will set the stage for a fruitful, hopeful conversation, and it's a constructive one, I think, about how this plays out.
One of the things that's true about, you know, living here in the city is the extent to which I think we're just used to this issue being with us. I can remember back to when I was a kid in the 70s, a teenager in the 80s. Of course, those were also times that were really beset by this kind of violence. It gets tiring. It's the kind of thing that nobody wants to see continue. But of course, there are lots of reasons that it persists. And one of the frustrating things is that even when we seem to make progress and mm-hmm. get things a little more under control, something happens that reminds us that those underlying issues are still there.
And it's an unfortunate scenario, too, because we know that, folks who gather, when communities gather together to see their family, their friends, hang out and have a good time, they're doing it in the spirit of really a togetherness. But having something like this kind of put a damper on that is unfortunate. But I know there's always, and there continues to be, a lot of folks who are working to try to make sure that these types of events happen safely, and that we can continue to do things like this without having to be looking over our shoulder about what may or may not happen at these events.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've got three guests today to help us figure this out. Who are they, Kerry?
Our three guests. Well, first we have Malachi Barrett. He is a reporter from Abridge Detroit. We're also joined by Yusef Shakur. He's a community organizer, author, and neighborhood activist. And then we have Pastor Daryl Harris. He is a pastor, or Bishop Daryl Harris, who is the founding pastor of Total Life Christian Ministries. And he works with Ceasefire Detroit.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get started in with our listeners. We want to hear from you about violence in Detroit, what you think we should be doing, what's happening in your community. 313-577-1019 is the number. Let's get started with Created Equal. Okay, Malachi, Yusef, and Pastor Daryl, welcome to Created Equal. Great to have all three of you here in studio.
Blessings. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Malachi, I'm going to start with you. You've been covering this this week, of course, but also for a long time have been covering the violence that, as I point out, we all kind of live with here in the city of Detroit. Just catch us up today where we are with what we know about what happened and what we know about the city's response in particular to what happened. There's been a lot of movement over the last 4 days.
Sure. So in terms of this particular incident, unfortunately, there's still a lot of unanswered questions as the police investigation continues. We do not have any suspects in custody, and police have not released any information about potential suspects. They believe there were multiple shooters involved. Basically, they responded around 2:30 in the morning Sunday to a report of shots fired in the Mohican Regent neighborhood on the far east side of the city. They found 21 people shot. Two died. There were 15 women who were shot, which I think has been particularly shocking for folks. And the age range, goes between 17 and 27. A lot of teens and young adults. Police found 100 shell casings at the scene. They recovered 9 weapons, including a Glock switch, which converts a handgun to an automatic weapon.
And bump stocks, right?
That's yep, as well. Yep. You know, the police chief has said that there's probably multiple shooters. They didn't want to talk about very many details of the case on Monday when they gave their last update. 2 dead, including a 20-year-old woman and a 21-year-old man. So also Monday, police announced their response. They're in increasing enforcement around what they're calling illegal block parties, which I'm sure we'll talk more about, kind of the language being used to describe these kinds of things. But basically, it's based on a rash of incidents involving parties on the street that have been getting out of hand this summer. Chief James White said police have received 500 911 calls stemming from block parties, and over the 4th of July weekend, they responded to 6 separate shootings. There were 27 people who were shot at those 6 parties, including a third person who died at another incident. So in response to that, they are increasing their response to calls. They are now priority 1 calls on the same level as violent incidents when somebody calls to report issues at a party or an outdoor gathering. They're also dispatching 80 officers into neighborhoods across the city to patrol for parties that are getting out of hand. And they're also stepping up kind of emphasis on people getting permits for block parties that basically block city streets. And I think it's important kind of to talk about, these aren't really like typical block parties where a neighborhood organization like shuts down the street each corner and people gather for the afternoon. These are kind of like street parties that go late into the night, gatherings at somebody's house that kind of spill out into the lawn or, neighbors' houses. They're advertised on social media and they're bringing people from outside the city. So that's been kind of the emphasis of the mayor, is to shut down this kind of unsanctioned partying that goes late into the night and gets kind of out of control.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the focus on parties. Put that in some context, Malachi. What we've been hearing for a while now in Detroit is about the drop in homicides, the drop in shootings, in violent crime in the city. And it was a dramatic drop statistically last year. Why, after something like this, is the focus on these parties as, I guess, the center or the nexus of this violence? What is it about, these parties that police think is motivating this kind of crime?
Well, based on what the mayor has been kind of characterizing, there's a couple of reasons. I guess first of all would be that there are folks from outside of the city who are coming down to these parties and taking advantage of what people might consider to be a more lenient or kind of lawless situation in Detroit. That's kind of the perception that the mayor talked about. I think there's also, Detroit recorded 81 fewer non-fatal shootings and 22 fewer homicides compared to this point in 2023. So we were seeing a downward trend in this kind of violence. The shooting occurred in the 9th precinct, which has, basically had the same level of those two statistics from the previous year. So it is a more violent area. Mm-hmm. The block parties themselves, this wasn't really something that anyone would have really gotten a permit for in the first place. I think the focus is...
Right. This wasn't an organized block party. It was just a party that kind of spilled out into several different places, right?
Right. Right.
I'm going to bring our other two guests into the conversation here, Yusuf Shakur and Pastor Daryl Harris. Yusuf, I'm going to start with you. Something like this happens, the anger that you feel, the frustration, it's really palpable. I just want to get your reaction to what happened and kind of where we are with this kind of violence in Detroit.
Good morning. What up, though? Just make a few additions. My name is Dr. Yusuf Bunchy Shakur.
Doctor.
Yes. And I'm also the co-executive director at the Michigan Roundtable for Just Communities.
Yes.
First, I think we should reframe because I don't think they're parties per se. They're gatherings that has a party tone to them.
Okay.
And to your point, I mean, these things have happened throughout Detroit in our lifetime. And as a result, or we don't explore the alcoholism, the drugs, the beefs. And so again, me and you come, you call me, I call Malachi, before you know it, you got 100 people there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this is important, being able to examine it from that dynamic. And then in reality, there's like three Detroits. There's downtown Detroit, there's midtown Detroit, and then there's the neighborhood.
There's rest of us.
Right. And the neighborhood Detroit, which operates on a different timeline, a different social structure. You know, Dr. Carl Taylor calls it the third city, the underground, the underworld. And it's an unfortunate thing. Like where my mother lived, my little homeboys would come out and they would want to shoot dice right in front of my mother's house. I pull up, you can't shoot dice here. What do you mean I can't? No, go to your mother's house and shoot dice in front of your mother. Because I know once you shoot dice, it possibly going to turn into an argument. Mm-hmm. That argument is going to turn into a fight. That fight is going to turn into blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of Yusefs in our neighborhood and being able to command that type of respect. But I challenge our leaders to stop thinking like politicians and start thinking like change agents. To start thinking like change agents and being able to understand the dynamics. Again, like when we had this great successful thing with the NFL draft downtown, and there's images of suburbians breaking up under the thing. That wasn't front page news. That wasn't let's legalize this and things of that nature, right? And I'm comparing the two in terms of the framing, the anti-blackness that comes about of where, again, using the illegal block parties and further rehumanizing that conversation. Because, again, no one created or done that with the intent to kill. No, it was a tent that, no, yeah, it was at the hours, and it should be monitored or not done at all. I'm on that, but how do we respond? I mean, the neighborhood response team that they're creating so fast kind of reminds me of the gang squad type of language.
Pastor Harris?
You know, and I'm siding with my brother Yusef on this, Dr. Yusef, in this situation that he mentioned concerning how he could pull up in front of his mother's house and he could have this kind of conversation and he could command this respect. Being a resident in the 1-3, being brought up in the 0-5, I feel his talk. It's just that sometimes when you're in the midst of that kind of breakout, it becomes scary. I think that the days have somewhat changed in the sense of being able to go outside and say, hey, sir, can you step off my grass? Mm. Or can you move your car from out front of my house? If you're going to blast your music and the music is going on at the party and there are four other cars on the block that are blasting their music at their cars, I think that now it just becomes a more enraged kind of response or reaction. And I feel like everybody is reacting as opposed to responding. I think that the Detroit Police Department is doing exactly what they do. They police.
Mm-hmm.
But when you begin to hear one of the things that was mentioned in his interview, is that the chief talked about the importance of taking level 3, which was noise complaints, to level 1.
Right.
And I think that was something done in respect or in retrospect to residents who had begun to lose kind of hope in the fact that there might be a response. People start calling early, right? You start calling and you say, hey, the noise is going. And it looks like people are kind of walking around. It looks like some folk are arguing this and that and the other. You get all of these calls. And because it was noted as a level 3 or priority 3, you might not get a response until something like this happens, and now we get a response. So I'm just saying in retrospect, I do agree.
And you think that elevating that response makes sense? Is that going to make things better or worse?
I don't know if they're going to make things better or worse. I won't take that position. But I will say in terms of the community or the young people who may be in this gathering setting, that it may be preventative to something further happening in that group.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm kind of stuck in between and betwixt. Our church is right in the community. I live right in the community. I was raised in the community. And on that Sunday morning, I remember going to the scene. And then I remember also that Sunday morning having several people who were vicarious victims to this. They weren't at the party. They had nothing to do with it. But they were there to see all the officers blocking them off from getting back into their home. They were there to see all of the flashing lights. They did have to try to explain to their children that they would be safe at night and nothing was wrong. And talking with these folk, you know, something has to be done. I expect the police to do what they need to do. They're the police. What I think is that everyone else escalates in these situations except the community. And that is where I'm definitely agreeing with Dr. Youssef, that the community also has to escalate in its response to what's going to take place.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Malachi Barrett, Dr. Youssef Bunchi Shakur, and Pastor Daryl Harris. We want to get going with you, the listeners, as well, on the phones and on social. Give us a call and let us know. Have you sort of experienced some of the violence that we live with here in the city of Detroit? What does it look like? How does it feel? What should we be doing to minimize more of that violence? Also, give us a sense of how you feel about police presence and response to violence in Detroit. Do we have the police playing the right role? Are they being aggressive enough? Are they being too aggressive in some cases? What is the relationship between policing and violence in cities like Detroit? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. We can make you part of the show that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we're talking about violence, gun violence in the city of Detroit. We had a stark reminder of the things that we live with in our city all the time. Over the weekend, a block party over on the city's east side was shot up, and many people were wounded by that incident. We're talking about what causes all of this, why it persists in the city, the response of police and other officials to this kind of violence, and, of course, what we should be doing to make it less of an issue. We've got three guests with us. Malachi Barrett is a reporter for Bridge Detroit who has been covering not just what happened over the weekend, but covering policing in the city for some time. Also, Dr. Youssef Bunchi Shakur is with us. He's a community organizer, neighborhood activist, and co-director of the Michigan Roundtable for Justice. We've also got Pastor Daryl Harris here with us. He's the founding pastor of Total Life Christian Ministries and works with Ceasefire Detroit. We want to hear from you as well, the listeners. Give us a call and let us know what you think about the state of violence, gun violence in Detroit. What do incidents like this tell us about it? What do they tell us about police and the relationship between police and Detroiters that is supposed to keep us all safer? Is that doing what it's supposed to do? We had a string of kind of good news about policing in the city for some time. Statistics that show that gun violence and homicide are less of a problem now than they used to be. This incident over the weekend is a reminder, though, that it still all lives with us. Give us a call at 313-577-1019. That's the number here, 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. Yusuf, I want to start with you again in this segment and have you just give us a sense of what you feel about what's going on with the trend of violence in Detroit. Is it getting better the way that the statistics suggest to us that it is, or is it not? And tell us why in either case. What is, I guess, what's the dynamic that's driving driving the violence either up or down or not making a difference?
Thank you. That's an important question. And for me, it's not an either or, it's a both and. Who doesn't want to live in a just community?
Yeah.
The reality is even criminals, guys with guns, first thing they're going to call the police. they don't want to get shot, right? These are fundamental things. Violence in Detroit, it represents violence in America. It mm-hmm. represents violence in the world. So mm-hmm. it's clear Detroit is not something unique around violence. But also what's not talked about is poverty. What's not talked about is economic violence. What I mean by economic violence, we could drive through parts of Detroit and we say this reminds you of a third world country. The dilapidated buildings, mm-hmm. the grass are taller than our children. The scars that are being put on our bodies, the trauma that comes from it, the new building that's being built on where your school was at, but you're knowing that you're not, it's not meant for you. Mm-hmm. And what does it tell you? I mean, these are the psychological dynamics that are happening right in front of our eyes. But also, and there's a lot of great things that's going on in the city, but it's excluding a lot of great people at the same time. And so it's saying like, as a child, your mama say, don't do what I say, right? Or don't do what I do, or your daddy, and you go and you imitate them. You go in the back and you try to smoke weed or whatever, because you got inquisitive mind. These parties or these gatherings, and I'm not for them per se, mm-hmm. because of what the potential. However, there's no crime for trying to have fun.
I was gonna say, I mean, that's just part of being in a community. It's exactly. part of being in a neighborhood.
So this is why, as pastors and bishops, we're challenging, we need community policing. We need politicians who are engaged in our community, are listening, particularly in those areas that have been forgotten, that have been so neglected, that this lawlessness that we use is an outlaw culture. And we have to diagnose the pathology of the social diseases that is like cancers that's creating this type of behavior, and rehumanizing them and creating outlets and supporting them, but also being stern as well.
Yeah, yeah. Pastor Harris, give us a sense of that community, the community that you serve and that your church serves, from the same perspective. Is violence getting better? Is it getting worse? And what are the dynamics that are pushing it in either direction?
I'll say that, first, I think, again, going to any root cause, violence is as American as apple pie.
Yes.
You see it everywhere. It's become a part of the overall culture, not the Black culture, not the Detroit culture, just the American.
It's just American.
It's just American. With that being said, I think that one of the challenges that we have in America is that when we look to public safety, we often start it with the pinnacle of the police. I think that public safety has to be redefined, and to understand that the community is the first area or the foundation of what it means to be publicly safe. Mm. And until we get to that ideology, we can always expect that the police, as opposed to them supporting the community, they feel that their job is to be the first step of public safety.
So what does that mean? What does that look like?
I think it looks exactly like what Dr. Yusuf mentioned earlier about being able to pull up in your neighborhood. Not the hood, mm-hmm. but exactly. in your neighborhood.
In your neighborhood.
And to be able to address two young men that may be shooting dice in front of your house, but because you may not know them, but you may know their mother, you may know their uncle, you may know their father, you're able to have a conversation with them And even if there is a disagreement or conflict, it doesn't start with the gun, right? And
do you feel like that's possible in the community that you serve?
I have to remain hopeful. If I weren't hopeful, I couldn't pastor in that community. I couldn't live in that community.
So does it work that way now?
I believe that it is on the uptick of that end. There are a lot of great community programming that's happening in the 48205, as well as some of the other districts. Mm-hmm. And now is the essence of trying to strengthen the turnaround, right? To where it starts there, where we're trying to set up these different places where restorative cycles can be had and conversations can be had mm-hmm. and resilience can come in a neighborhood, right? When block club party, you know, or block club persons come together, you know, if there is a dispute, then how can we settle that amongst ourselves without it going to the gun? I know we're a long way from it, perhaps, but yes, I'm very hopeful that if we can just continue in that vein and not become distracted by the responses of other people or the reaction, I should say, because mm-hmm. I believe that there's a difference between a reaction and a response. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I believe that what the Detroit Police Department is doing is they're reacting. I believe that they have to react because they feel that they have to react because there are citizens out there that say, hey, till you live on this block and you feel isolated in your own home, we need you guys to do something, because the way that they look at public safety is that it starts with the police, as opposed to seeing that, hey, this may start with me going out and start having some conversations when conflict is not, you know, in the room.
Now, one of the ironies here is exactly what you're talking about is sort of manifested in these parties, right? I mean, that's how you talk to your neighbors. That's how you, in the summertime in the city, that's how you interact with your neighbors. And the response from the city is, well, let's crack down on the parties and make it harder, really, for people to do that. But that does counteract exactly the dynamic that you're talking about, which is getting more people to be able to talk with each other about what's going on in their communities.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Malachi, this bumping up against the sort of dynamics of community and policing by the things that the police are doing, I want to have you talk just a little about how the police department explains its approach to these things. Chief James White is someone who has talked about community policing for many, many, many years, way before he was the chief. I mean, he's somebody who has really embraced that approach. How does that match up with what they're doing here in response to what happened over the weekend?
Yeah, I think the first thing to acknowledge here is, you know, I was at a vigil last night that was organized by Council President Mary Sheffield and had a lot of folks from the neighborhood out. And basically everybody was in consensus on the idea that, you know, that we're not going to be able to police or enforce our way out of the solution, that there are root causes that need to be addressed, and the police response, you know, can prevent in some cases, but as we're talking about, you know, is often comes after an incident already happens, and there needs to be things done on the front end to prevent, you know, escalation. The community violence intervention program that the city launched last summer has shown some success on the west side of the city in, you know, groups that are monitoring social media, getting ahead of conflicts between individuals and stepping in and, you know, de-escalating those situations. That didn't happen in this case. The shooting occurred within a CVI zone, and I don't want to, you know, speculate too much on what occurred and why. But I think there is an acknowledgement from Chief White that there needs to be community partnership on this, that they can dispatch more officers. And, you know, there was a father of one of the women that was killed who spoke last night. It was very difficult to hear him speak. It took him a minute to kind of muster the willpower to address, you know, what was a pretty large crowd last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said he hasn't really seen anything like this, and he was really frustrated that there's a perception that, and we talked about the NFL draft, there's a perception that the police power has been concentrated in downtown and commercial corridors and things like that to the detriment of neighborhoods. And there's a number of residents who have said that they called 911 that night. you know, long before 2 a.m. to try to get police to come out. And for whatever reason, I think police were responding to other incidents in the area. They didn't come out. And there was a frustration that there's this kind of misallocation of resources. So I think there's a number of things that are going on. I think the chief talks about needing community partnerships to identify situations that could turn violent, especially when parties like this, underground parties, you know, things that are not really ever going to be advertised or for, you know, neighborhood groups or things like that. To get ahead of that, but also that there needs to be police there when people call for them and ask for the help.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we do need to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get to our listeners, strong queue of listeners who are already lined up to participate in this conversation. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number. Call and tell us what you make of violence in Detroit, of community in Detroit, of policing in Detroit in this 4 days after this mass shooting in a neighborhood during a block party. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. (313) 577-1019 is the number here at Create Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and what we want to hear from you about today is this mass shooting that took place on the east side of Detroit over the weekend. What do you think the response should be? What has the response been? Where are we with gun violence and violence in general here in the city of Detroit? You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We've got three guests with us in studio. Malachi Barrett, who is a reporter for Bridge Detroit, who's been covering the aftermath of the shooting, but also been covering policing in the city. Dr. Yusuf Bunji Shakur, who is a community organizer and author and neighborhood activist, also co-director of the Michigan Roundtable for Justice. And Pastor Daryl Harris, who is the founding pastor of Total Life Christian Ministries, and who works with Ceasefire Detroit. Let's start today with Randy in Detroit. Randy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you guys doing today?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, yeah. So I strongly believe that there should be a military presence on the street. When you're having, and I know that sounds extreme, but that the type of violence that you saw on Sunday is also extreme. And the police department is just not equipped to deal with that type of violence. And everyday police, I mean, the police department is can hardly do the regular job, not alone, you know, being able to withstand a force that you saw on Sunday. And it's, I mean, it's good to sit and talk about systemic changes in the culture, but this is a generational thing. You know, this doesn't happen just in a couple of years, and people are dying every day.
So,
Go ahead.
So, Randy, before I get back to our guests, I want to ask you a couple questions. What neighborhood do you live in Detroit?
I live in Bagley.
Okay. And when you think of a military presence that you're talking about, what would that look like for you? And what would you be okay with in Bagley? For instance, if the police were to adopt this military presence,
I would be okay with a unit being assigned to each neighborhood, a fully equipped unit of professional military men and women who are able to deal with the type of violence that we see on a daily basis.
Randy, I can't say I agree with that approach, but I do appreciate you listening and calling and suggesting it. I'll get our guests to respond. Pastor Harris, I'll start with you this time.
I'm just going to have to say a hard no.
A hard no. Yeah.
I live in that area. The idea of a tank rolling down my street or someone with military weaponry, and I do understand and I appreciate his sentiments and where he's coming from, I do feel that it necessarily needs a response. Sometimes that's enforcing, but not necessarily military.
Yeah, you know, and I guess I still don't quite understand what Randy thinks that presence would do. I mean, he's talking about responding to an incident like this. The police were not there when it happened. You know, I'm not sure that a military presence would have deterred it. Yusuf, what do you think of what Randy's suggesting here?
I'm appalled. I almost threw up in my mouth. I mean, I respect his opinion, but the reality is over policing black communities is not the solution.
And with the history of that here, I think it's hard to even to have a serious conversation about it. But I'm not disrespecting Randy at all. He lives here like we do, and this is the way he sees it.
And that's why it's important to really dive deeper into the dynamics and this anti-black narrative that really comes out. Because, you know, when we think about a couple of years ago when that mass shooting happened in Las Vegas, automatic semi-weapons, we don't think of it saying, like, we need a military over there. Like, this is... Detroit is not unique in this situation. And then the dynamics of when black people gather as if we need policing, as if we can't operate. Like, this is not the norm. This is an abnormal situation. Mm-hmm. We need to come in with caution. We need to come in speaking with care and thinking deeply, as well as accountability.
And I think, and if I could just, you know, but I think that Brother Randy's comments come from this sense of frustration of dealing with this sort of violence just year in and year out. And at some point he represents in that statement just the pure frustration that a lot of people that I talk to, they don't know exactly what to do, but they want something desperately to be done because they're a part of and witnessing and being vicariously included in this type of traumatic stimuli. And I think that that is just where that statement could possibly come from.
Yeah. Speaking of that frustration, I want to go to the next caller who is somebody who I think is feeling it too. Robbie in Redford. Robbie, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just want to say that it definitely needs to stop. My daughter is 17, and we've lived in the city for a very long time. And we moved out to a suburban community, but she loves to go see her friends because that's what kids do. My daughter is 19 now, and we literally just lost one of her friends from childhood that she had gone through elementary and middle, and well, she had gone to the same middle and high school as Michaela. And I have to say, not high school, but she lost another friend. I'm blending them all in at this point. The one girl that was just lost was Taylor Gladney. And I do have to say, she was just doing what her mom told her. When a party looked like it had turned suspicious, she hadn't even been there for an hour. They let off shots in front of the party, and she was killed, you know. She literally just died, thank you, May 22nd. My concern is, when does it stop being our kids? You know, we're talking about policing the community, but, you know, we've been policed enough. It's been years and years. Like, look at the uprising from, you know, from the prior police brutality in the 60s. Sure. It just needs to stop. And the police brutality goes on. I have someone who was assaulted down in Greektown a few years back. So more policing is not the answer. But somebody needs to do something about these deaths that are happening because we're losing our best and brightest kids.
Right.
Taylor did not deserve that. She was a cheerleader at University Prep.
Robbie, there's a part of your story I want to dig a little deeper into. You said you used to live in the city and you moved out. Talk about that decision and the role that violence in the city played in it, if any. But also, what have you found in the community that you've moved to? Is there something there that you think maybe we could be doing in Detroit, or is there not much difference?
Well, I'll say this. I was born and raised in the city, and the only reason that I left was because of the devastation that my daughter was seeing. And because, you know, it just was nonstop. It didn't have an ending. It just, kept going, and it continues to spiral. I left, and that's been now almost 2 years. I do find that my area is much cleaner. The policing is not as vigilant, and they're not as they respond. Actually, they can respond to the actual things that are going on instead of just kind of rolling around and doing other odd jobs that are assigned. They actually ride around, and I know that I'm going to get a police response when I call. Mm-hmm. When I lived in the city, it was catch as catch can. You know, literally, I had to tell somebody someone is breaking in my home now, and they said, "Well, do you see them in there?"
Wow.
You know.
Wow. Wow. Robbie, I'm sorry for all of these experiences that you've had, but I really love that you called and shared them with our listeners. Malachi, this is, it seems to me, kind of the worst nightmare for James White and the mayor, Mike Duggan, this idea of how what that breaking point is for people who live here when they decide, look, I just can't take it anymore, and I've got to go. You know, that combined with the points that people are making about the role of policing and that tension between too much and not enough, I just don't know how you approach it or how you solve it if you're them.
Yeah, I mean, putting aside, which is difficult to do, but putting aside the human cost of this and the tragedy of the individuals involved, there's a lot of kind of political narratives that we could talk about. You know, particularly when it comes around the last few months of being told that gun violence was, you know, was being solved in Detroit, really, that the trends were going in the right direction and that the police response was working. And then, you know, we have large incidents like this that are really shocking. And a lot of folks have never seen anything to this scale. I mean, mm-hmm. to some extent, gun violence in Detroit is normalized statewide. You know, it's interesting that, you know, this is statistically one of the worst, if not the worst, shooting that Michigan's ever experienced.
Yeah.
It hasn't necessarily been acknowledged as such. It hasn't really made national news, to my understanding.
That's an important point to kind of linger on a little bit. 22 people get shot in Detroit, and it doesn't make national news.
Right. And why is that? Right. I mean, I'd be curious to hear what our guests think about that particular dynamic, too.
Yeah. Yusuf?
Well, I want to first start with, because I don't want to make this like a contrary to Robin or put her on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
But what about those who can't move?
Who can't leave?
Who can't leave? Right. And I'm not in, though. I live on off near 8 Mile,
mm-hmm.
and on the Detroit side. And I make that point when I leave my neighborhood I grew up in. And I go there, it's a contrasting difference. The way it's served. So here's another thing.
You mean the difference between where you live now and where I grew up
and where majority of my work is. Here's something that we don't talk about either. And I'm pretty sure we all have experienced if you're in Detroit. You're driving down your street and somebody's blocking the street, won't move. And you're blowing your horn and they yelling at you like you're wrong, like you did something wrong, and they're ready.
That happens right outside my house sometimes. Yeah. Right?
You know, I mean, there's multiple dynamics to this situation, and I think the solution is a social movement. So when you look at when our social movements was at its high, at its peak, we didn't have these type of dynamics, but in particular in very vulnerable communities. In these very vulnerable neighborhoods where grandma and granddaddy are living and the young folks who are being transformed into wolves. Mm. And they're hungry and they're eating because we living in a lopsided community, a lopsided city. You know, if I'm living in zone 8 and I go across, you know, a half a mile over to Midtown, how you think I'm going to look at folks over here? And these are things that we have to examine. And this is the reality of why it's not being talked about. Let's be clear, it's an anti-black narrative. Because again, if this was Royal Oak, if this was, and I hate to say this because it still puts us down, but there's a more value on white folks in this country than black bodies.
Right, of course. Pastor Harris, what about this idea of not being noticed, right? 22 people get shot and it doesn't make the news.
It's frustrating. I can't speak to why that is. I know that, you know, there are a bunch of different breakouts, and sometimes you know, things get noticed in a vacuum and don't necessarily spread out. Oftentimes things spread out that I wish wouldn't spread out, that would only be talked about in the vacuum. This happens to be one of those situations that I don't know if it just happened because there is a commonality to it, because, again, there is an expectation that this is what's happening in that area, so it's not really anything to talk about. I know that I'm going to a prayer vigil tonight, Councilman Scott Benson, that's his district, and he's having some folk over. And so I don't know necessarily how I feel about it not being broadcast, because Detroit gets such a bad, you know, I don't think that, I don't know if this would make
right. Do we need the negative news?
Do we really
news?
Need it? Because right. It may add to that narrative of, you know, what it means to be black or live in these neighborhoods that we live in. And we've all seen that. Something happens in Southfield. They say, hey, look at Detroit, you know, or Metro Detroit, as they like to spin. And so I don't know necessarily if I have a feeling about that as much as I have a feeling about people, and I want to be very careful how I say this, people who exploit this tragedy for whatever their own potential end may be. I've seen people coming in and out of the community that before this particular incident happened may not have been in and out of this community. Mm-hmm. But since this has happened, you know, it's being talked about. People are coming in, coming out, and they're not necessarily coming in with answers or coming in with motivating even. How do we begin to create answers? There's kind of taking advantage of this opportunity to exploit. Yeah. And so being a resident there, pastoring there for over 25 years, dealing with those who are there and have been there for a long time, again, I'm just calling for, you know, whatever community looks like. And sometimes I'm afraid to even use that word, because community puts it in the sense of business, whereas neighborhood reminds you of the people who live there. Mm. And I wanted to go back to a neighborhood.
So we've got just a couple minutes left. Pastor Harris, I want to have you talk about it's 4 days since this happened in this community. As you say, you're going to go to another prayer vigil tonight. I don't imagine it'll be the last. What else? What's the next thing that puts this community back on a path to some sort of normalcy or healing?
So there is an essence that is taking place now. It's a program. It's going to be called Moving Forward. Our church is a part of it. There are some other agencies that are part of it. And what we're going to be doing is meeting weekly for like 6 weeks or so, just with those families that were involved and impacted. And then we're going to try to continue that narrative thereout. But we wanted to start with 6 weeks just to see if this is the right thing to do.
Right.
I think sometimes, again, under the pressure that we're under, that we have to react. And so people are looking for a quick fix. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to find solutions that could be long lasting, that can be preventative more than intervention. And so that's just one of the things that's happening there. And I think agencies, and everybody means well, everyone who's been in the area, and let me make sure I say this, everyone who's been in the area and has been coming in, I am not calling you predatory.
Right.
I am not saying that.
A lot of people
are
just
you.
Trying to help.
I'm just, a lot of great people are just trying to, the vigil yesterday, it was just trying to help. I'm only speaking of those who are coming in for that exploitation, but all the rest of you, every community needs you. 48205 needs you. All of us are looking to work together to come with some solution that can best benefit and help our young people and the residents who live in the city.
Yusuf, I've only got about a minute left, but I want to get you to talk about that same thing. Next, what is it?
For us, we're approaching August 3rd. It'll be our 19th year of our Restoring the Neighbor Back to the Hood Neighborhood Festival. We're going through some struggles with the city to get the permits and whatnot. You know, you come out, you experience what the violence, declining violence looks like. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody know what zone it is, that neighborhood, the imagery that you have, where our homeboys, female and male, have taken pride in their community, being engaged in them. But also, you know, in setting up something called, something I do every year, State of the Neighborhood Address, bringing folks together to address on a neighborhood level and again, stop calling our where we live hoods and start calling them neighborhoods.
Communities, yeah.
And then fundamentally what's meant by that is start being neighborly with each other.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Dr. Yusuf Bunchi Shakur, Pastor Daryl Harris, and Malachi Barrett. Great to have all three of you here to talk about this today. Thanks for joining us on Created Equal. It's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Remember, you can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org. We'd love if you subscribe to the podcast as well. Created Equal is produced by Kerry Jr. II and David Lines. The engineer is Nate Bender. Our audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.